Hello, everyone. My name is Jan Jaffe, and I'm thrilled to be debuting my solo radio show today on the Life Coach Radio Network. My show will broadcast monthly on the second Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern of each month. Some of you may already know me from the group shows I've hosted and co-hosted here on the Life Coach Radio Network and the Life Coach Chat Channel. In order to let you know more about me, I'm delighted and honored to be joined today by my dear friend, life and business coach and educator extraordinaire, Mark Schall. Mark, please introduce yourself to our listening audience.
Well, hello, Jan. Thank you. And hello, Jan's listening audience. This is Mark Schall, and I'm really delighted to be here. I'm a certified life coach and business coach, I also am a coaching instructor at IPEC Coaching, the leading coach training school in the country, and which is how I know Jan. So I'm very excited, Jan, to be here and see you launch your first program. I also have my own radio show here on the Life Coach Radio Network called Mark My Words. So Jan is now a fellow host here on the Life Coach Radio Network. So congratulations, Jan, and welcome to your first show.
Oh, thank you, and thank you so much, Mark, for being here for me today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm happy to interview you and tell and so that you get the chance to tell everybody your fantastic story about how you got here. So so thank you for asking me. And you know, everybody, I met Jan. How long ago was it, Jan? A year and a half ago?
Yes, it was the fall of 2013.
Wow, God, time flies. And so yeah, so the fall of 2013 was when I met Jan, when she started her preparation as a certified coach, and so I was her instructor. So I'm really, really excited to help you, Jan, today launch your first show. So and I wish you lots of luck with lots of listeners as time goes on.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. And it has been such a pleasure getting to know you, and we're neighbors. I don't know if you want to let the listening audience know, but we are actual neighbors. We live just a couple blocks from each other in New York City. So
yes,
that's
do.
Really
on
a
the
treat.
West side.
Yes,
the
it's
best
really a treat.
In town.
That's true. One of the best neighborhoods on the planet. For sure.
Very cool. So, Jan, let's jump right in, actually. So I would love for you to tell a little bit about your background. And, of course, some of this I know, and some of this I'm sure I don't know. So this is exciting for me, too. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mark. I grew up on Long Island, actually. Long Island is part of New York. It's
Long Island, as they say.
Long Island, yes. I never spoke like that, however. But anyway, it was a kind of a blue-collar, middle-class neighborhood, and my whole life was about academics and excelling in that area. And when I was growing up, I was I'm aging myself, but this was in the 60s when they did a lot of experiments, and I was one of 25 young children aged, I was 9 years old, we were all 9 years old, and they took 25 children out of two school districts, two big elementary schools, actually, in one school district, and they took these 25 children with very, very high IQs, and put us in an educational or academic experiment. We were totally isolated from everyone else. We did fourth, fifth, and sixth grade in 2 years with a very advanced and accelerated math and science program. And, of course, I realize now in retrospect that our English or reading was also accelerated. We had the same teacher for 2 years. We even ate lunch separately. We had our own class play.
Wow.
And, yeah, and we recently had... And, yes, that explains... It was Wizard of Oz, one of your favorite movies and shows, I think, Mark.
Yep.
And, yes, it was hilarious. We painted our own sceneries, and we made our own, made our own sets and our own costumes. And we just loved it. And if you can imagine, it's all these very geeky children, and we just loved those 2 years. We have recently had a reunion a few years ago. People came from all over the country and even out of the country, and you know, there are some, there's a brain surgeon, there's all kinds of interesting people, and it was just marvelous, and we're hoping to do it again because these were a very special 2 years. Unfortunately, they found that socially it wasn't the best experiment. So even into 7th and 8th grade, they kept us together, and then they started moving us apart. And after a number of years, they did away with the program because they found that, as I said, socially it wasn't a good idea. You know, surprise, right. Isolation. But it was, we loved it. Those were two really great years of our lives. So, in high school, I ended up even further ahead. My parents didn't want me to graduate yet another year early. I was already a year ahead. So, I always sang. I never took it seriously. Some girls were cheerleaders. You know, some girls were really pretty. I sang. And so in order to get a really good scholarship to school, well, before that, I'm interrupting myself. In order to get a voice teacher, my parents asked my sister's piano teacher for a recommendation. He had us contact Manhattan School of Music to see if they could recommend anybody. Anyway, to make a long story short, they wanted to hear me first, then they offered me a scholarship to go there on Saturdays when I was in high school. So I was put in classes with children much younger than myself because I really, other than a couple of years of rudimentary piano, I had no music background. So I decided after that, because I really needed a full scholarship to college, I combined that, the singing, with my academic record and got a full scholarship to Northwestern University, which has a fabulous music school and is also excellent academically. So, and Chicago is a wonderful, wonderful town with lots of great music and art and culture. It just has the worst climate. So,
certainly true. So, yeah, the weather in Chicago, lovely city, but it's just too cold. Not that New York is much better, though, is it?
Well, at least you won't get blown away when there's ice on the street.
Very true. Very, very true. So cool. Well, Jan, I heard that you have a story from your childhood concerning a prank that you pulled someone that most of us know. So depending on how old we are, most of us know him. So tell us about this.
Okay. Well, I must have been about 10 or 11 years old, and I was a very good child, a very serious child. So I never pulled pranks. But this is one that I've realized over the years. This was a pretty good prank. But the reason behind it was that when both my parents worked, and when they were at home, the strict rule was no boys in the house. And I was about 10 or 11 years old. I was a little ballet dancer, so I was light on my feet. My sister was about 15. And she had a good friend from across the street, and they had these two boys over who were, they lived around the block, and there was this big circle block that I lived on, and it was a circle with a street that cut it in between. One side of the street, my side of that part of the circle, went to one school district. The other half, went to a totally different school district. It was actually a different town. That was Hicksville, not mine, but theirs was called Hicksville, and their school colors were orange and black, and they were known to be tough. So these guys played in a band. There were a lot of bands back then, but they were, all the girls had the hots for these guys. And so these two boys were over, and my sister and her girlfriend were sitting on the sofa with the two couples next to each other making out, what we used to call making out, necking. And the two boys had paper bags with airplane glue in it because back then that's what tough boys did. Right? They sniffed glue. Have you ever heard about that, Mark?
I remember hearing about it when I was in school, yeah. Wow.
Well, I was getting upset because if my parents found out, I would get into trouble too. So I snuck, and I'm a little sister. Nobody's paying attention to me. I'm very light on my feet, so I'm crawling along the floor. I steal their bags, with, I go into the bathroom, and that was the era of lots of aerosols in the 60s. I think it was the 60s. No, it was already early 70s. But anyway, no, it was, okay, 60s, pardon me. And I opened the bags up, and I sprayed everything that we had in the house, Lysol, hairspray, Right Guard. I think there were other things back then. I can't even remember. And then I closed the bags back up, snuck back over, put the bags down. They never noticed me. And then I tied the boys' shoelaces together. And then I snuck back, and I'm hiding on the stairs, just barely peeping down. And the boys, at one point, they reach down for their bags, take a big inhalation, and start choking. And they realized what I did, and they get up to start running after me, and they fall on their faces because their shoes are tied together. And I fly upstairs, and I'm hiding in the closet. And meanwhile, at that point, I guess their ardor has been extinguished, and they left. But the interesting part of this story is that one of the boys, his name is Billy Joel, the Billy Joel.
The Billy Joel, the singer?
The Billy Joel. Yeah, Uptown Girl, that's the Billy Joel.
Wow. Well, I'm sure he would love you just the way you are then.
I thought I should, I should probably see if I can get in touch with him and remind him of that story because he just might remember it.
Wow. That's pretty wild. You're a little villain you there when you're a little girl, weren't you?
I guess so. I didn't want to get in trouble, so.
Yeah, oh my. Yeah, I want to get in trouble, so I made them inhale hairspray and made them trip and fall all over themselves.
I got them out of the house.
Works for me. Wow. So after you grew up, if you did, tell me a little bit about your career as a classical artist. I know that you said before that, you know, with school you had an interest in music and dance, and so I guess that sort of led you to a bit of a career as a classical artist, derailed by a moment of stardom with Billy Joel. So tell us a little bit about your career as a classical artist, considered you almost ruined Billy Joel's career as an artist.
Well, yes, I was incredibly fortunate at Northwestern University, which was just a wonderful, wonderful school and experience and great musicians, people that I'm still in touch with who perform all over the world. And I began while I was still a grad student, I soloed with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I worked with Minnesota Orchestra, the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, Rochester Philharmonic. I worked with the Netherlands Dance Theater as a singer. I mean, I've worked all over the world. I also worked in the Far East, and I worked with some great conductors like George Schulte, Carlo Maria Giulini, David Zinman, and just so many. It was just an amazing experience. I sang in Switzerland, in Zurich, in the opera studio there. I also was the leading soprano at the Mainz City Opera. And so it was a wonderful career, and I'm really grateful. I've recorded with Chicago Symphony, and I even got to be featured artist on what was called Artist Showcase with Adolf Hirsis, whom some people may remember as one of the top world's leading trumpet players.
Oh, wow.
And that was on WGN. I don't even know if that exists anymore in Chicago.
Uh-huh. I think it does. It did at least the last time I was there.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Very cool. And I understand that you have a little bit more of a celebrity status that you recently discovered about yourself when you were Googling your name. Tell us about that.
Yes, I don't Google my name often, but I know that one should to find out. It's a good idea to just find out what's out there and what's the most recent stuff. And I was looking to see if my radio shows were on there, and I discovered that I am available as a ringtone. A Mozart, I believe it's the second movement of a Mozart motet, and it's on there. As a ringtone available. Unfortunately, I don't get any residuals, but yes, it's amazing what you'll discover about yourself when you Google yourself.
Well, I would say it's probably a lot better than than most of the other ringtones that are out there that are popular songs. It's just it's unbelievable what people think is acceptable for a ringtone. And, you know, you're sitting there somewhere in a restaurant or whatever, and all of a sudden some bam, 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 bam. And it's like, because it's their favorite song. They don't care that it's ever, no one else's favorite song. It's just theirs. They're going to blast it whenever the phone rings. So I'm sure yours is much, much more pleasant to listen to.
Oh, well, thank you. It would have to ring for about 7 minutes, I think, to get the whole thing on.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Mm. Well, very cool. Very cool. So I'd like to ask you, if I may, about something that may be a little bit of a sensitive topic for you, although it is part of your story and your history. And it's actually what it's about what has temporarily derailed your music career, your artist career. So if I can, may I ask you about that?
Oh, sure. Sure.
So basically, it was your traumatic brain injuries and your auto accident. And that really kind of took you out of your game for quite some time. What happened there?
Okay, well, that is, and that will be not the cheery portion of this conversation. I suffered actually three traumatic brain injuries. One of them was as a result of a really devastating auto accident. But that was actually the mildest of the three. I, in the 90s, both in the early and the late 90s, I suffered two traumatic brain injuries. The first of which was I'm considered the neurologists consider me a miracle for having survived. I lost consciousness for 8 hours, and if anybody knows
wow.
anything about brain injury or even concussions. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to. If you are with somebody who's experienced this, you're supposed to keep them awake. And mm-hmm. I was alone, and so I bled out for 8 hours, and I did wake up. But the thing about traumatic brain injury, if anybody knows anything about shaken baby syndrome, that's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. The soft tissue of the brain gets banged back and forth against the hard skull, and it's actually injured. And so I didn't even remember there was such a thing as a phone. I could barely see and wasn't really aware. I couldn't remember anything. I mean anything. And the thing about traumatic brain injuries is that sometimes the brain then swells afterwards. So the damage is worse afterwards. It's even worse. I lost language for 6 weeks. It was 4 months before I was on a walker. I never got the rehab I needed because back then, first of all, they didn't know as much about brain injuries, and I didn't have anybody to advocate for me. So I was incredibly confused, and I had to teach myself how to brush my teeth again, shower, etc. And I had to kind of fill in over time the portions of my memory that were lost. There are still things I don't remember that were just not important for me to put back together. Eventually, I guess, you know, more and more pieces come back. But it's amazing how much you can do on your own when there's no other choice. My second one was, I guess they'd consider that moderate because I didn't lose consciousness anywhere near as long. But both times I had to have I had in the emergency room, a plastic surgeon the first time he had to put my nose back together. It was in four pieces. And I've had a total of over 200 stitches on my face. And
wow.
So, you know, you do what you have to do. And the car accident was yet another one. I mean, it was a very, very bad accident. I was not driving.
After the first TBI was that?
How long after the first TBI?
Yeah.
The first one, the second one was about 5 years after the first one.
Okay.
And the third one was the car accident was a year after that.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah, 98 and 99. So it was, and then I had I had vertigo for a solid year after the car accident, because when you hit your head a lot, those little fibers in your ears can get loosened up and they can move, and that can cause some pretty terrific vertigo. But I got over it, and I've been incredibly fortunate to, you know, I heal really well. It took a long time. I deal with injuries with spinal injuries from all of this, but through research, my own research, and a great neurologist, I've figured out how naturally to deal with pain without having to take pain medications or having surgery or any of that. So, know, it teaches you a lot. It really does.
Sure, sure. And as you know as a coach, as I know as a coach, right, all of life's experiences, a purpose can be found in them, right?
Absolutely.
You know, they teach us. So what are some? What would you say are some of the lessons that you experienced this?
Well, first I guess I can mention some of what I experienced, which is, you know, I lost myself, my definition of how I defined myself, which was this totally driven and focused and devoted opera singer, and that was my purpose in life, and I felt totally lost. But I also found that there's a great strength in vulnerability, because you have no choice at that point but to be vulnerable. And I also, when you're in that state, you don't, at least me anyway, you don't have the luxury, or you're not even aware of, oh my God, look at me, blah, 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 because at least for me, I didn't have that luxury, but I also wasn't that aware. I was trying to figure out how to brush my teeth, how to put one foot in front of the other, and come out of this giant fog. And I also, I found that there was great opportunity and challenge, because I really have always loved a challenge. And here, you know,
well,
as soon as I was
one there.
I sure did. And I found out, I discovered strengths I'd never known I had. I really discovered, I learned about resiliency, you know. I also...
What's one of the strengths that you discovered that you didn't realize you had?
I'm very good at picking myself up, dusting myself off, and hurling myself forward. And also when you lose what you knew as your purpose, you start to become aware of other things. And I guess... because I had focused so much on achievement, that was really what I felt that I was all about. I had been kind of trained and groomed for this my whole life, to achieve, no matter what I did, whether it was academics or this. And when you go into classical music, you're always focusing on excellence and mastery. And so I now had to focus on mastery as a human being and finding myself again. I didn't even know who I was. And I discovered I'm very compassionate. And it's been one of the gifts of all of this, is learning how to accept myself, be very aware, forgive myself, because I always had two sets of standards. One for everybody else, and then one much, much, much higher for myself. And this taught me how to accept myself where I was, and to have compassion not only for the people around me, but for myself as well. And I realized I'm very empathic, and it also, though, gave me a much better understanding and awareness and empathy for other people's struggles, and an appreciation of where they are. And I think it just broadened my general feeling of love for people. So I think that's part of the gift, and I just want to be able to help everyone else with resiliency and a sense of optimism and a love for the process, which is something that opera singers and classical musicians love, is the process, because what we do is all about the process.
So tell me a little bit more when you say the process. What exactly do you mean? Let's clarify that for your listeners.
Okay. When it comes to, for example, when I would do a performance, and I loved doing concerts, although opera is great too, but I started out doing concerts because to me that was a lot more academic. I loved rehearsing. Oh, I love rehearsing. My favorite performance, in fact, was when I wasn't on stage and I was in the orchestra pit. So I just loved working on the music, making the music, being part of the ensemble. There was no ego. It was all about the work, serving the art, serving my fellow musicians, working together. We were all one. It was fantastic. Being on stage in a performance, that was more about not the process of putting things together, but the final product. There was never the, it didn't feel like there was the opportunity to continue to grow. You could do whatever you could do in the performance, but you're suddenly aware of, okay, my hair has to be perfect, my gown, I have to make sure, and I can't be just wearing comfortable clothes for a rehearsal. I have to look like an opera singer on stage. I'm standing in front of the orchestra. Thank God I'm wearing a long dress because my knees are shaking. And I'm aware that there are all these people in the audience staring at me. That is was not... So that's the final outcome as opposed to the process of making the music.
So how do you, so relate that a little bit now to life. Because as you, we'll talk about your coaching a little bit later on in the show, but how do you relate that to life as you work with clients about them enjoying or paying attention to the process?
Right. Thank you for that question. It's the same, you know, when I work with a student, a voice student, when I work with a singer, it's about the process. It's about how we work through and examine what's going on. Because working with vocal technique, we'll start with that. Working with vocal technique is very interesting because a singer, as a singer, you are your instrument. So you can't take it out and look at it and say, okay, if I press here, you know, like a wind instrument, say a trumpet, if I press here, I get this note, and if I press there, you are your instrument. So everywhere you go, you're taking and exposing your instrument. And if you are upset or tense or stressed, or tired, so is your instrument. And as I think all of us know, sometimes they'll say, oh, I was really sad, or I was upset, or whatever. I had a lump in my throat. You know, we feel it in our throats often. And, you know, you're getting on stage, especially if you're a professional singer of a certain level, people are paying hundreds of dollars for those tickets. So there's a lot of stress there. So in order to get to a point where you are able to excel and give the kind of performance that you want to provide for the composer, for the audience, for just for the sake of the art, you know, and nothing is ever perfect, but you're always striving for something as close to perfection. So it's there's a process before you get to that point of working and working and fine-tuning. And any great artist will tell you the process is a joy. The process is a joy.
And that has really amazing implications for coaching, for life coaching.
Absolutely.
And before we get more into that, I think it's time for a commercial break, which I'm going to turn over to you to lead us into. So I'm going to take a pause and turn it back over to you, Jan, for our commercial break. We'll be back shortly.
Thank you so much, Mark. You know, here on the Life Coach Radio Networks, we are proud to have as our sponsor Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the Internet, offering customers a new way to enhance and enrich their lives every day. Audible is the preeminent provider of spoken word audio products, which include more than 100,000 audio programs from more than 1,800 content providers. Receive a free audiobook with your 30-day trial when you sign up with Audible today at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. Audible.com, making listening a tool for life. And now I'd like to just mention a couple of books on Audible that relate to our topic today. And the first one is Broken Butterfly, My Daughter's Struggle with Brain Injury by Karen Finnell. And the second one is called Me Now, Who Next? The Inspiring Story of a Traumatic Brain Injury Recovery by Angela Leigh Tucker and Bill Ramsey. So please call or don't call, sign up today with audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio to receive your 30-day free trial. Audible.com, making listening a tool for life. And now back to our show.
Okay, great. And here we are again on the Life Coach Radio Network. So thank you, Jan, for sharing your story with us all today. And it's certainly an inspiring one, and I think that as people potentially even listen to the two audiobooks that you mentioned, I think they could probably even appreciate even more what your struggle was about and just how incredible your story really is. So before we get more into the implications for coaching and how you got into coaching and how you see this whole thing about focusing on the process and appreciating the process and how that's a really great metaphor for life and how you bring that into your coaching, I'm actually concerned a little bit more for right now about how you got back to yourself after all of those experiences. You talked a little bit about your recovery, but how did you ultimately get there, and what's sort of the new normal for you now?
Well, the new normal actually is a process, I'm realizing. And the interesting thing was I had these traumatic brain injuries in 93, 98, and then in 99 was the car accident. And so there were a lot of lost years for me. I did not have the rehab that is available for people with brain injury. So perhaps I lost more years than I actually could have had I had this rehab. You know, I'm not really sure, other than I didn't have an advocate. And I had nobody to send me to Rusk. Rusk in New York, Rusk Brain Rehab, is amazing. They work with, they have a whole couple of floors that work that are just devoted to brain injury, traumatic brain injury survivors. And unless you have somebody to advocate for you, first of all, when you're that injured and it's your brain, you're not capable of taking care of these things because you're still trying to figure out, like I said, how to brush your teeth and shower and do those things and function and, pay for things. And here's the thing, too. Traumatic brain injury isn't just about cognitive stuff. For quite a while, especially after my first one, my blood pressure could not stay stable. It just kept dropping, and I would almost pass out. And at one point, I was blacking out, but we were taking my blood pressure a lot then, and my mother was there for a couple of weeks at the beginning. And the lowest that we ever recorded it while I was still conscious was 44 over 22. So if anybody knows about blood pressure, it's amazing that I was able to stay conscious. And my muscles wouldn't operate correctly because your brain, you know, that's like your, you know, your computer. It's what is that part of the computer that runs everything? But that's basically what it is. So it's not just... I'm sorry?
The processor.
There you go. Exactly. So your processor is damaged. Body functions aren't working properly. So this is what was going on. And I'm trying to – what was – oh, you were talking about the rehab. So to be able to figure out what I needed was virtually impossible. I hung on to my walker for years because I was that disabled. And in 2005, I was put on different medications because they really didn't know what was wrong and what was causing this. They were checking my heart, and they didn't really understand that this was a traumatic brain injury. They just, if you don't have the right doctor to, because I wasn't with neurologists then. I had one who was, he was board certified as a neurologist, but that was not his main, that was not how he, you know, how he treated patients, that was not his main thrust. So it took years, and it was only, I guess in 2005, I believe it was, because of something else, some other blood level that came out really scary, I was sent for an MRI of my brain, and that was when they discovered that I have a meningioma, which is a very tiny brain tumor. Non-cancerous, but still it's your brain. They have to keep track of it because if it grows, it's a problem. It can cause blindness where it is. So, and that was causing, could cause seizures. I was given, if I'm given a medication that can lower what's called, everybody has a seizure threshold. Anybody can have a seizure at any time. When you have a brain tumor, the brain waves over the tumor can, like in mine and other people's, it slows down. So you have to be very careful about keeping a high seizure threshold. So I was given some medication. You should never give anybody who has a condition that could cause a seizure. So that's what caused these seizures. These huge seizures, because I'm not inclined to have that type. But anybody can, especially if you're given a medication that would be contraindicated for someone like me. And, I mean, I can't even take Benadryl. So that gives you an idea of how careful I have to be. So so that's, you know, the rehab was basically for years me just trying to figure out how to function and how to walk and how to do things. And for many years, I was in shame about this because I didn't understand that this was brain injury. And no one had really, if you don't have somebody to tell you and to treat you properly, you don't know. So I was filled with shame and guilt over why was I not who I was and why could I not function properly and why could I not think.
Right. And you had no idea that it was because of this.
None. I tried to go back to singing, and I couldn't even figure out for years. Let's put it this way. For years, if you asked me, I mean years, until just a few years ago, if you asked me what month it was, even if there was snow outside, I would just say July. It was, and going out around a lot of people was, there was just too much information for my brain to process. So you want to talk about process, everything is process, just taking in information. So speaking to people was unbelievably challenging. Having a conversation was really challenging and very anxiety-producing because I always felt like I was translating. Like I said, there were 6 weeks where I totally, I lost language. It took me, I could not translate. So... this is basically what it was.
Yeah, so you got through all of that. It took an enormous amount of time, and it sounds like an enormous amount of work. And no wonder why you've learned to honor the process, because, you know, if you're going to be all results-oriented at a time like that, you'd probably go insane because the result is so far down the road. And the growth, of course, is in the process. You know, it's almost the same as physical therapy. It's right, you got to be present.
Yeah.
When doing the physical therapy, it's not about the result. It's actually about doing the things to get to the result. So it's
you know, the thing I was
neurologically.
Absolutely. And the thing is, when you're in that state and that condition, when your brain is that injured, you're not even thinking about the end result because you can't get there. Your brain, you're just trying to focus because when you have frontal lobe damage, which is what I do have, I've sustained frontal lobe damage. So focusing is really tough. You're not aware. You know, it's hard to even explain what it's like, but you're not even thinking, you know, goals down the line because you can't. It's not, well, I'm going to put it on the back burner. You're just not able to. You're trying to process everything. And so over time, what I did when I was getting to a much better place, I was looking for, I guess, some sort of spiritual guidance in all of this. And I investigated something called NVC, that's nonviolent communication, which most people don't understand by that name. I believe it was Marshall Williamson who started all of this. It's also known as some splinter groups of this call themselves compassionate communication, which is, it's really about empathy and what true empathy is and what empathy is when you discuss with, when you communicate with other people, how you can take that into diplomacy, and also about self-empathy. And I got involved with an intensive weekend, and then I actually did a retreat up in the country with them. Then from there, I also got involved in the Kabbalah Center in New York, and I started taking courses. And they have 3 10-week sessions. It's called Power of Kabbalah. I think you're familiar with this, Mark. And it's basically Kabbalah for the masses. And it's the Kabbalah, for example, that Madonna has been involved with. And I did all 30 weeks. And then I also did a bunch of other classes, other courses. And I found from that, I just found that somehow I started getting drawn to coaching because I've always loved helping other people. When I was singing around the world, I also taught master classes. And I was concerned about being on stage, but once I was on stage and once I was working, you're working with a student on stage, I was so lost in the process. Here we go again with process. The process of working with someone, the gift, the honor, the blessing of working with someone. And it's so much, you know, teaching voice. When you talk about a voice teacher, you're talking about the technical aspects of vocal technique. But there's also vocal coaching. And that's what I did mostly in master classes. We're not there in a 20-minute or a 30-minute session to teach a singer who is of a certain level vocal technique. We are now working on the interpretation and how they right. can use their voice. So that's coaching. And I so loved that it got me involved or pulled toward coaching, life coaching. And
what's the kind of coaching that you do now with regard to that? Who do you work with and what is it that you accomplish with your clients?
Well, I work with opera singers. Surprise. Mm-hmm. Originally, I was thinking possibly of working with brain injury survivors, but I realized that is something that I've experienced, but it's not who I am and how I identify. And the people that I identify with, the people that I feel that I would have the most to offer are opera singers. Opera singers.
What do you help them accomplish as you coach them?
Yes. Well, opera singers have no problems with discipline and the process. You know, that's part of what we're all about. We're very devoted. We're very focused. We have 100% engagement as long as certain other things are in line. And some of the things that opera singers struggle with are their inner critics, feeling, you know, I'm not really good enough. I don't know why I'm here. These little voices that tell us that, because when it comes to opera and classical music, you are striving for perfection. You're working within a very tight framework, and within this tight framework, you're making art, you're creating music, but you're always working within this very tight framework, and we love that challenge, and we honor it, and we honor the composers, and we honor the art and our fellow musicians. So it's our inner critics, the stress that we deal with, because the career, you're traveling all the time. There's guilt over personal relationships and parental challenges, because if you've been fortunate enough to have to be able to maintain a personal relationship and then have children, and then, I mean, I've known of others, I have a friend who's a wonderful, highly regarded international singer who was constantly feeling guilty about leaving her son. He was her top priority. And yet she always maintained her professional commitments, but she was filled with guilt and a lot of stress, so much so that she suffered a TIA, a mini stroke, in her 30s. So I help opera singers achieve improved confidence, self-acceptance, because there are times you're not at your best, and you have to accept. Even if you miss, if something happens, and God forbid you miss a note, you have to be constantly in the moment, not a moment. You can't be thinking about, oh, God, I missed that. You just have to realize, always be fully present. So that's self-acceptance and being able to have balance in every aspect of your life, because that's one thing I learned through my brain injuries is that I didn't have balance. That was all I had. And you can't. You know, anything can happen at any time. And with so many orchestras closing and opera companies closing, there's less work. So there are some wonderful singers who are finding themselves now without work. So it's to have balance in your life is to know who you are as not just a voice, as not just this musician. So the end result of my work with singers is that they can integrate their professional and personal lives and reach their greatest potential and maintain mental, emotional, and physical resilience so that they can create and maintain the career of their dreams and they don't have to sacrifice a fulfilled personal life.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I can hear the connections between your life experience and that, you know, even though you're not working with people with traumatic brain injuries, right, what you're saying is really what you yourself kind of had to go through, finding that balance, discovering who you are, you know, and I'm also hearing that you help people, you know, conquer their gremlins. You talk about their inner critic, you know, their own versions of I'm not good enough, as well as self-care. Including physical self-care and emotional self-care and their relationships. And, you know, and as you know as a coach, as I know as a coach, we're holistic beings. So if there's something that's out of whack in one area of our lives, it's going to affect the other area, you know, any other areas of our lives as well. So it sounds like you really help singers manage that. You've got tons of personal life experience to bear on that to be an incredible asset to your clients.
Thank you. Yes, and of course, as a former world-class opera and concert singer, I have a unique understanding of what singers experience, how they think, what life is like in this career, and the unique challenges it offers. So my experiences with resiliency are really, they're part of this whole recipe. And singers have to be resilient, not only because of, you know, how the traveling and all of that, but we experience a lot of rejection too. You know, there are auditions, and we have to be aware of constantly focusing on the now. So if we experience rejection, which we will, I mean, famous singers get terrible reviews, and just focus on always being the best possible version of ourselves, which is not being fake or wearing a mask. It's about being truly authentic and understanding what true authenticity is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what is true authenticity to you?
I love that question. True authenticity is also, it's not just only, I'm me, take it or leave it kind of thing. It's also understanding, it's tied in with acceptance, self-acceptance, because it's understanding that we are a unique, once-in-a-lifetime being, and that we are human, and that everybody on this planet has a birthright to be happy, to fulfill our destinies, and to become the best, as I said, the best possible version of ourselves. We don't have to be perfect. We're not perfect. We're not robots. We are human beings. And as such, there is that process of constantly growing. We create our lives. We are not a victim of our lives. We are not at the effect of our lives. We create our lives. And I heard somebody say in life, one of the things about being authentic and the process and growing, which is all part of authenticity, she said the problems never get smaller. They never go away. The problems never, never vanish. Problems are always there, but we grow. And I loved that because, yeah. I feel that we kind of, as long as we accept the challenge and the opportunity to grow and transform, we can then step into our authentic greatness. And everything, there are silver linings in everything. And I certainly would not be the person I am now if I had not experienced all that I've experienced, the good and the challenging. So I'm grateful for it all because I wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, as I'll tell you, as a coach, it's delightful to hear that. And, the next level beyond that, which is I know where I take my clients, and I know that that's where you'll take yours too, is beyond the silver lining and to just seeing everything as an opportunity to begin with, because one of the things that we talk about in coaching is how seeing a silver lining in something requires us to first see it as something that's a dark cloud. We get to a point in life where things that happen aren't dark clouds to begin with. If we raise our consciousness to a certain level, everything that happens is an opportunity, even if it's painful. That's a point that we can get to, and that I'm sure you will help your clients get to in your world, in their world. That's great stuff. And I'm really glad that you see that and you're able to now make what apparently is your true contribution to the world. And I'm glad that you found your way to coaching. You found your way to my class. So great stuff. And this has been really terrific. We're actually just about out of time. It has flown by really fast. But it's been really terrific getting to know you at an even deeper level and learn the things about you that I didn't already know. So,
oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
Wow, Mark, thank you. And I can't believe we're out of time. Wow, it's gone by so quickly. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I want to thank you so much. I mean, this my wonderful, wonderful friend and guest host, Mark Shaw. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for joining me today and my show and helping me to introduce.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Ah, yes, thank you. And for helping me to introduce myself to my listening audience. And, Mark, I'm so very grateful for your superb contribution to the show. I don't know what I would have done without you. And everyone listening, please be sure to tune in every first and third Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern for Mark's show, Mark My Words. It's here on the Life Coach Radio Network. You will be so glad you did, so don't miss that. And I just wanted to let everybody know that I'm offering my listeners a free 30-minute discovery session. If anyone would like to contact me, I can be reached at info@forwardtosuccess.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, at forwardtosuccess.com. So, and I also just wanted to have a few closing words here about some upcoming shows on our sister networks. We have on the Life Coach Radio Network on July 9th, it says it's called Message to Millennial Entrepreneurs. This is at 12 noon. Message to Millennial Entrepreneurs from Justin Lafazan, and I apologize to him if I've mispronounced his name. On July 10th at 5 p.m., we have Improve Your Life with Amina. That should be a wonderful show. And on July 11th at 10 a.m., Reveal Your Excellence with the on-camera coach, Renee Ellison. On a sister network, Life Coach Chat Channel, on July 17th, we have Business Lunch with Michael O'Brien at 12 noon. On July 21st at 7 p.m., Transform Your Life with Coach Tamara, What I Would Say to My Younger Self. And on July 22nd at 12 noon, we have Coach's Roundtable Transitions, and that is my show that I do with several other coaches. So please tune in then. And then on one more network that we have, the International Life Coach Radio Network, on July 23rd at 7 p.m., we have Bring Back the Joy, Boundaries Required. So I just wanted to, again, thank everyone for joining us today, and especially Mark Shaw for being this incredible co-host and his wonderful contribution to the show. Thank you so much, Mark. So until next time, have a great week and live your best life. Goodbye.
You are currently the only person in this conference.